Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us on the SDCCU fan hotline, and actually right next to me,
yeah,
as we speak, AJ Cassavall. First of all, fantastic article today, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was there was quite a bit to write about.
I was about to say, you didn't have very much to write about, so I mean, I don't know where you pulled it out, but were you in Colorado for this past series?
Yeah, I was there, and I've never seen anything like it. It was almost like a different sport. There were times where it kind of felt like basketball, where like team scored and you kind of just roll your eyes.
Here comes another run.
Yeah, another run. But I mean, it was exciting and it was interesting. It's not just the fact that they set the runs record. It was kind of the way that they got there. There were a million different things that happened. There were floods in the outfield inside the park, home
ejections,
runs,
there's ejections. Everything.
Yeah, it was. The craziest series I've ever seen.
And even the people, from what I understand, AJ, that see the Rockies on a daily basis and follow them in Colorado all these years, even they thought this was a crazy series for them. Like, I mean, they had never seen anything quite this crazy, even though there's been a bunch of series like this in Denver over the years.
Yeah, and I got some responses when I talked about how crazy it was, and some of them were just, oh, well, that's Coors. Well, no, it's not.
No.
Coors has been around for a long time, and it's never seen anything like this. So the records that got shattered and the records that got broken, of course the ballpark has some impact, but there was kind of something else at work. I think it was just a combination of some weird moments, some bad pitching, a couple good offenses, and a couple guys breaking out, and it was wild.
I mean, in all of those other games that were record-setting before, and there was a lot of bit of those things that you mentioned, too. Bad pitching, some weird circumstances going on, and that's really what the project. But the thing that I want to get into, because I found it to be, I don't know if it was irony or not, but Hunter Renfro's name gets put in an article about trade deadline, and he just absolutely goes off.
Yeah.
And you know what we've seen is almost like a transition now, right? It was Hunter to start the season, then it was Fran Mill that kind of overtook him. Now we're back in Hunter's land, and he's pretty much looking like a king right now based on how he swung the bat. Where does that situation sit at?
I think he's an all-star. I think if you look at his numbers and where he ranks among National League outfielders, he's not a starter, but I think there's a case that you could make for Hunter Renfro as an all-star. And
Kirby Yates.
Well, they could both make it, right? I mean, the Padres haven't had a couple all-stars in a long time, but I think there's a case to be made for Renfro, Yates, and maybe even Fernando Tatis. I know he missed a month, but his numbers are unbelievable, and if he keeps putting them up for I don't know when the final teams are announced. He's not going to win the vote, but I think July 1st, if he keeps doing what he's doing, if you're hitting 340, even if you missed a month in the season and playing the shortstop that he's playing, there's a case to be made there too. But back to Renfro, it's not just the power, and the power is really good, and he's, I think, tied for second in the majors in home runs. He's played really good outfield defense too,
really,
which
good.
The Padres have needed, because they don't have a lot of cover in the outfield with some of the lineups that they're putting out there. And he's working better at bats. He's hitting home runs. He's playing quality outfield defense, and he's kind of doing whatever the Padres ask of him. He's started, I think, around 75% of the games, and he's kind of just fine with that role.
He kind of got back to what he was doing at the end of last season as far as those at-bats. That's a very good point.
There's nobody that's in the history of baseball that I can think of that's ever led their league in home runs that didn't start all the time. And he's got a chance, actually, to do that. I think he's only three behind Yelich right now as they start this series with the Brewers. AJ Cassavell is with us from MLB.com. My mind works backwards when I see a series like we saw over the weekend in Denver. So I was really impressed with Luis Perdomo, 2 2/3 scoreless innings. How did that happen yesterday? Jesus Tinoco, 3 hitless innings yesterday for the Rockies out of the bullpen. How did that happen yesterday?
I was like, I know I wasn't paying a lot of attention, but I didn't know the Padres had that guy in it.
No, they didn't.
Sense. Okay.
And the Padres bullpen finished off the series by retiring the final 10 Colorado Rocky batters in order. So there was some really weird stuff that happened beyond the obvious stuff, because somebody had to get a couple of outs somewhere. Yeah. At least somebody did, thankfully, or we'd still be sitting there.
Luis Perdomo's, I think for the whole series, it was 5 1/3 scoreless.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. I didn't even know that.
So, it was more than five. He's looked really good lately. Trey Wingenther had a couple really good innings in that comeback game on Friday night.
Right.
When they went to him in the bottom of the ninth inning and needed cover for the tenth, too, and he shut him down for those two innings. It didn't feel like – that kind of felt like a moment where he – another run was going to score because they were coming so rapidly, and then for two innings, Trey Wingenther shuts down the Rockies, and that gets forgotten in all of it because he's the ninth most important piece of the weekend. But he was still a really important piece. It was just such a crazy weekend that those things get lost. But they are worth pointing out because the Padres don't win those two games without him, without Perdomo. Mm-hmm. The comebacks were kind of cool because they weren't. I know Renfro hit the three homers and he had home runs in both of the rallies on Friday and then the rally on Sunday.
But
it wasn't just him. There was a lot to the comebacks. There were guys working walks and guys understanding the situation that when you're down by three runs in the ninth inning, you don't need to hit a home run with no one on base. Manny Machado and Eric Hosmer working walks to kind of get that rally going. So it was really. I was going to say really interesting baseball, but was it baseball?
I don't know. But like
it was Rocky baseball.
It was a little bigger than baseball, but it was fun. Is there any chance that any of it can carry over for the Padres? I mean, because the one thing they've had trouble is scoring runs without the home run, and even in this series, they scored a ton of runs without the home run.
Yeah, and that's partly what goes into Coors Field because that outfield is so big. It's up to them to make that series a launching point. They have a tough series this week against Milwaukee. Then they have some off days. I think they'll kind of be able to reset their pitching staff, which has been knocked around a lot lately. The three off days coming up in an 8-day stretch are going to help them a lot to reshuffle what things are.
Yeah, because the euphoria wears off of this terrific record-setting series in Denver, but the issue with that is that the Padres and the Rockies both used a lot of pitching. We talked about a 27-plus innings pitched by the Padres bullpen.
That's insane.
Three games. That's three games worth of bullpen use. And so, reportedly, Logan Allen's going to come up and make the start tomorrow. What are you hearing on those fronts?
Yeah, so Logan Allen's going to debut tomorrow, and he's I don't know that was always the plan, but the fact that they have no cover, they might have gone to a bullpen day on Tuesday, but the bullpen's just so fried right now that they can't do it. So he'll be called up. Tonight it's imperative that Joey Lucchese goes out there and gives him six, seven innings because the bullpen, there have been times where the bullpen's been tested, but I can't remember one like this where every single guy, even the guys who were rested yesterday, pitched a lot the day before that. And the guys who pitched yesterday also pitched other games in the series. So it's as difficult a maneuvering job for Andy Green as I think we've seen with the bullpen.
How much of an issue did the Padres have with umpire Tim Welke? Because it seemed like this was a carryover maybe of what happened here in San Diego with Manny putting the bat down. Was there any talks of that after the game?
No, kind of surprisingly, no. Manny didn't even know that it was Welke.
That doesn't surprise me.
So I think they were just frustrated with his strike zone. And
both teams were.
Both teams were the whole entire night. Yeah. The Padres were chirping before that whole thing got set off. So I think they were just frustrated with some bad calls. And perhaps justifiably so. Maybe not Manny's actions after the ejection. But the strike zone was a little iffy. And when you see both teams jawing as much as they were, I think I don't always pay attention to the strike zone when I'm watching the game because my angle isn't always the best for it. But when you see the dugout chirping like that, that's when you know it might be a little off, and that's what the Padres took exception with.
Does he have any chance to win the suspension? He's appealing it. He's got a one-game suspension. These things usually end up happening, do they not?
Yeah, they usually end up happening, and sometimes the appeal is just done for the sake of an appeal to kind of take the suspension when you want to take it. I don't think that's the case with this. I don't know that for sure.
Right.
But I think Manny intends to go through with this appeal. I don't know that for a fact, but These things usually don't end with a player winning the appeal. So yeah. I would expect the suspension to happen at some point.
It only usually works when there's multiple games that you've been suspended. They may knock one off, but very rarely is there a one-game suspension and they just completely clear it out. So,
yeah.
AJ, as always, man, we appreciate you having you on.
Hey, read his column today on MLB.com. It was like 9 things that stood out about this series in Denver over the weekend.
He could have gone a lot more, too, if he wanted
to. You could have done 99 things that stood out.
I could have. I actually wanted to, and I was limited to 9. I was told I had to keep it to
it was
9.
Really a good column. Really good. I mean, stuff that you probably didn't even see happen that happened over the weekend in this series.
99
is
issues,
column.
But scoring ain't one.
That wasn't an issue.
AJ Casball, MLB.com. Thank you for joining us, brother. That was AJ Casball on the SDCCU hotline. Vote SDCCU Best Credit Union in the Union Tribune Readers Poll daily at SDCCU.com/vote. San Diego County Credit Union is not.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big bank banking, it's better. Well, joining us now, I think probably would be one of the hottest guests going around right now. Joining us on the SDCCU fan hotline is Mike Bresnahan, Spectrum Sportsnet, L.A. Mike, first and foremost, how's your Monday going?
You know, it's a little less hectic than my Saturday went. That was kind of a chaotic afternoon and evening. And, wow, the Lakers go from a team that missed playoffs, finished, 12th in the West, 11th in the West, whatever it was, to a team that, in some eyes of the Vegas oddmakers, they're going to win it all, which is just a huge, huge turnaround for them, gigantic trade. I'm sure – I have a feeling that's what you guys want me to talk about.
Oh, yeah, that is exactly what we want you to talk about. And I'm going to throw the first question at you.
Sure.
Obviously, the Lakers acquire Anthony Davis. They give up a nice big load to the New Orleans Pelicans. How do they spend the remaining dollars? Now, I know there's some talk that maybe if the two teams wait till the end of July, they'll have a little about $10 million more dollars in cap space. But let's just say that that doesn't happen. Are they going to spread it out amongst guys that they need to fill the depth, or are they adamant about getting a third, so to speak, superstar to add to this roster?
You know, it's a great question. I'll tell you what, if this trade is postponed another month, a little over a month, about a month and a half almost, then yeah, the Lakers will have a cap space of about $32 million to spend towards next season. And that right there, that will get you a max level guy. But if the trade is completed in a couple weeks, right around July 6th, when the moratorium is lifted, then indeed the Lakers drop down to about $22-23 million in cap space. And that's about $10 million less than what some of these high-end free agents can command. So they'd have to take a pretty good haircut if they want to join the Lakers. I'm not sure that's going to happen. You know, the persuasive powers of the front office might be able to convince somebody to join the Lakers for a little bit of a haircut there. But if not, I think you're right. I think instead you take that $23 million and you try to spread it over a couple of players, maybe J.J. Redick and Jeff Teague. You got two starters right there who will take, you know, $11, $12 million each, whatever it is. Then you can try and go out and get someone via the mid-level exception to kind of shore up that backcourt. Because right now, guys, they have one guard on their roster, and that is Isaac Bonga, who did not show much as a rookie last season. Not a lot of playing time for him. A second-round draft pick a year ago in the draft.
Tony's excited because the Lakers only have like 4 guys on the roster. He's thinking he might get a phone call if he just plays his cards right. Mike Bresnahan, Spectrum Sportsnet, L.A., joining us. The Lakers obviously changing everything around with the trade for Anthony Davis over the weekend. Mike, how did they honestly, going back now, did they pull this off? I mean, it seemed like the Lakers did everything wrong from the very beginning here, from coming out and saying they wanted Anthony Davis, from everybody going 100% all in for Anthony Davis, to seemingly upsetting the Pelicans, to then losing Magic Johnson, to then firing their coach, to then having all of the upheaval in the front office. And then all of a sudden they came out smelling like a rose. How did that happen? How did that all, I mean, it seemed like they did nothing right for 7 months and landed exactly what they were looking for in the first place.
I think you missed a couple things. You missed the LeBron groin injury that kept him out longer than any other injury in his career. I mean, absolutely. It has been a tumultuous 6 months or so for the Lakers, really ever since the day they beat Golden State on Christmas. They were fourth in the West, but that's also the day LeBron got hurt. He would miss 7 weeks, and the team never really recovered, and obviously the offseason turbulence. And this is a big 180. This is a big, big pickup for them. To me, Anthony Davis is, if he's not a top five player, he's number six. And I feel like you've already got a pretty good player on your roster, LeBron James, obviously. And this is big. This is, there's no doubt about it. Some people say they gave up too much. And I would say, well, you know, Lonzo Ball, a lot of fans of his in the Southern California area, but he's missed 40%, 4-0, of all the games he could have played in his first 2 years in the NBA. He just hasn't shown a willingness to stay healthy. Not that he can't will to stay healthy. He hasn't shown a propensity to stay healthy. And he's bad with the percentages too, guys. We're talking about a 47% free throw shooter, not real sharp from three-point range. So these are things that can be worked on, we just haven't seen it yet. And, of course, Brandon Ingram, he played 3 years. He was showing some pretty good stuff till he went down with that bizarre injury. He got the blood clot in the arm, cost him the last 2 months of the season. I think he'll be a good piece, but neither one of those guys in my mind, nor whoever the fourth pick turns out to be, will be an Anthony Davis caliber player.
Yeah, Mike, I tend to agree with you when you think about, especially the picks, because that seems to be what has everybody up in arms. If the Lakers are even just halfway decent, and that's in the middle of the pack, these picks don't amount to end up being anything. And if they end up even better than that in the playoffs, now you're talking about picking in the late first round, and it takes some skill and some luck to hit in those areas.
Yeah, and the Lakers obviously did it with Hart and Kuzma in the last couple of years, late first round picks. But I think you're right. These picks remind me of kind of what the Lakers had when they were winning titles with Shaq and Kobe. They picked up guys like Sasha Vujacic, Jordan Farmer, you know, rotation players for sure. But as long as the Lakers stay in that top five in the standings, these picks will essentially be almost second rounders for New Orleans. So, you know, would I have liked to see the Lakers maybe instead of giving away three first rounders, maybe give away only two first rounders? Yes. But to me, the key is kind of the underreported key is they kept Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah.
And for the Lakers, from what I'm hearing, it was either Kyle Kuzma or the fourth overall pick. The Lakers did not want to part with both. And to them, Kuzma was a better asset than the fourth overall pick. Now, if you're talking two or three with Ja Morant or R.J. Barrett, then okay. But there's a little bit of a drop-off after the top three in next week's draft, or I guess this week's draft now. So I think the Lakers are cool with keeping Kuzma. He could be really good off the bench, or he could fill out that front court with LeBron and Anthony Davis.
Mike Bresnahan breaking down the Lakers trade with New Orleans for Anthony Davis. This last thing for me, Mike, to me, I don't even really look at the trade as much as I'm looking at LeBron James and trying to figure out just how much he has left. I think that, and I'm not saying he's near the end of the road by any stretch, but the Cleveland team that he won with had Kyrie Irving, it had Kevin Love, and then it had a bunch of complimentary players. This Laker team's going to have a great player in Anthony Davis. They might acquire a Kyrie Irving, who knows, but they already have a Kyle Kuzma. But how close is LeBron James skill-wise now to what he was even 2 or 3 years ago going forward with this Laker ball club?
You know, I have to go by what I saw on the court this last season. He played about 55 games, and when he played, he was typical LeBron. He was a triple-double threat every night. He was hitting some shots that even he was like, wow, this is pretty impressive. You know, some deep threes, some crazy dunks. So what I saw on the court from him was enough to make me think, yeah, he can keep doing this for a couple more years. The problem is, yeah, he did get hurt on Christmas night up in Golden State. And he missed a bunch of games, obviously. So can he come back from that? Can he strengthen his body so that he doesn't miss one-third of the season again? And some of those missed games were just kind of sitting out the last couple weeks. You know, the Lakers were already eliminated, but he seemed pretty driven. He was really confused. by why this groin injury cost him 7 weeks, and he seemed pretty driven to try to come back even stronger for next season.
Yeah, I totally get the confusion for a guy who had never been hurt ever in his career. That would be a little bit frustrating. One more thing before I let you get out of here, Mike. The Lakers have a pretty much put together what it looks like as a pretty good coaching staff. How do you feel like that dynamic with Hollins and Kidd and Vogel will all work? Those guys have all been head coaches at one point.
I'll tell you what, the happiest guy in the world is Frank Vogel. He was eager to sign on the dotted line last month. And probably the saddest guy in the world is Ty Lue. He said no to 3 years and $18 million. He wanted a little bit more time to coach in his contract. And now there's this amazing team potentially. Again, let's see what they do with that remaining cap space. And I think Vogel's ecstatic. And everyone's like, "Ooh, Jason Kidd, you know, is Frank nervous about this?" Frank knew ahead of time that the Kidd was probably going to be his number one assistant coach. And he still signed on the dotted line. I haven't talked to Frank about it, but just the fact that he was okay with it and said, "Yeah, I'll be the coach of the Lakers. Sure, if you want to bring in Jason Kidd, bring in Jason Kidd. If he's okay with it, I'm okay with it." And I think it's a little bit over-reported storyline among the Laker media members. And I think it'll probably die down because there's something bigger to write about now, and there could be something additionally large just in a couple weeks here with free agency just around the corner.
All right, Mike, great stuff. Appreciate it. Once they sign somebody else or call Tony Gwynn Jr., we'll call you and get you back on the show.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you coming on, all right, brother.
Guys.
Thanks.
Anytime. You got it.
Mike Bresnahan there on the SDCCU hotline. Vote SDCCU Best Credit Union in the Union Tribune Readers Poll daily at sdccu.com/vote. San Diego County Credit Union, it's not big bank banking. It is better.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right. We are back at Petco Park for a quick three-game series, which it's always nice to come here and see everybody batting practice on the field and all that stuff.
What's any quicker about this three-game series than most three-game series?
Well, they're going to leave town after the three-game series. That's why it's quick. It's a quick home stand.
That's the better way to describe it.
All right, it's going to be one of these days, huh?
It's going to be one of these days.
If you're going to run the show, run it right.
All right. Jeez, let's go to number five.
Jeez.
Coming in hot.
Number five. All right.
Number five.
The Packers fired longtime head coach Mike McCarthy last season because Aaron Rodgers didn't see eye to eye on the play calling. Stories from last year even say that he changed the plays in the huddle because he didn't like them. Well, Mike Silver of NFL.com wrote today that new head coach Matt LaFleur is going to have to change his style of coaching a bit. He said, quote, Matt LaFleur said, quote, about coaching Aaron Rodgers, "We've never really had a quarterback who's had complete freedom to change plays at the line because that's not really the way the offense is set up. But, I mean, this is Aaron Rodgers. He had a lot of freedom to make those calls, and deservedly so. Now, how do you reconcile that and get to a place where we can put him in the best position to succeed?" End quote. Tony, do you think we are going to see issues between Aaron Rodgers and his new coach this year?
No. I think his new head coach knows where his bread is buttered at.
Mm.
And that's Aaron Rodgers. We have at least all felt like that he had something to do with Mike McCarthy's departure. But I think if the new head coach is smart, he'll go ahead and not necessarily concede everything, but I think what Aaron Rodgers is asking for is more ability to change the plays at the line. He probably should, at least until it fails. Once it fails, now he has, I think it would give him the room to be able to change it if you say, here you go, here are the keys, and Aaron Rodgers goes out and they lose three of the first four games, now you got yourself an easy way to change it and really do it in a way that doesn't make anybody look bad.
Good answer, Chris. What do you think? Do you think we're going to see problems between Aaron Rodgers and his new head coach?
Yeah, I do. I think we definitely will, as a matter. I don't think it really matters who coaches Aaron Rodgers anymore. I think you're going to have problems. You're going to have friction. I think success has gone to Aaron Rodgers' head, and not necessarily in a good way. I mean, part of it's in a good way. He's got ultimate confidence. He's got ultimate skill. He's got the ability to be as good as anybody in the league. But I still think even a quarterback, and that means Tom Brady, that means whatever quarterback you want to talk about, to be successful in the NFL and in football in general, I still think you need to work within the framework of the team. And if you're going to go out and do your own thing and not pay attention to your coaches, then I think there's going to be friction. I don't see how there can't be friction. And I'm warning Aaron Rodgers that I think he's kind of reached the edge of the cliff here. And it's like, enough already. Just relax, be a great player, but be a great teammate too. And I don't know that Aaron Rodgers can say that about him right now, the way things have gone down the last couple of years.
That's true.
I like Aaron Rodgers. I wish he was on my team, but I think Aaron Rodgers has changed a little bit over the last couple of years, and it's not necessarily for the better.
All right, good answers, guys. Let's go to number four.
Number four.
The women of Team USA won their second World Cup match over Chile 3-0. I had to get that one in there. And some people are mad at Team USA star Carly Lloyd for how she handled her celebration after being criticized for running up the score and celebrating too much in their 13-0 win over Thailand. Lloyd was subdued in the first goal of the game. She had a slight fist pump and then did a small golf clap. Look at me, guys, just like this.
I know what
just like that.
You know what a golf clap looks like.
Just like that.
I felt like she was doing it just for me.
Okay. And now the internet is mad at her for making a mockery of the criticism for celebrating too much. This is where we're at in society, people. Chris, do you think she deserves the new criticism for how she handled the celebration?
No, she doesn't deserve necessarily criticism for that, because then people are just looking to criticize for the sake of criticizing. But I will say this. The United States women's soccer team put itself in this position by the way it acted in the first game. And I told you that they overreacted to all of their goals in the first game. And I thought it was poor sportsmanship, and I didn't like it at the time. And I think that they set themselves up to be criticized as this tournament goes along. And it's their bed. They made it. Now they got to lie in it. So If they don't like that, then you shouldn't have made the bed the way you did in the first place. I think people are being ridiculous to criticize Carly Lloyd, because now you're just looking for stuff. But this United States soccer team is not my all-time favorite yet. They need to do some things to kind of win me over.
Tony, what do you think? Do you think that Carly Lloyd's celebration was too much?
No. I didn't think the 13-0 was too much. I didn't think this was too much. Listen, at the end of the day, this is the best team in the world. In their particular sport. I watched the whole game, and the only goal that you could say was a little bit excessive was the count that Morgan had. The rest of it was just normal kids scoring their first goal in a World Cup in a lot of cases. So I don't know what the big fuss is about.
Or Alex Morgan scoring her fourth and fifth of the game.
Well, which is what I recall. I literally just said the only one that you could consider egregious was Morgan counting two, three, four.
Okay.
But that was it. The rest of them, I didn't have a problem with it. A lot of those girls, like I said, scored their goal for the first time. And the other ones weren't even that bad. So, you know, everybody likes to be mad at everything, and everybody wants – it's particularly American athletes to have this, you know, I take everything, you know, I am just scoring goals and playing the game the way, the right way. And, you know, that's boring sometimes, especially for a sport like soccer. So,
I had a lot of people tweet me back when I was critical of the American team and say, well, did you get mad when the Dream Team ran up the score?
Ooh, great question.
I was asked that several times, and I said no. I said no, I did not get mad when the Dream Team ran up the score. But I will say this, I was never all that impressed with the Dream Team. Like, what they accomplished didn't impress me. I mean, I loved watching all those guys on the same court together play basketball, but what they accomplished didn't impress me, and what the U.S. accomplished against Thailand didn't impress me either. What they may do eventually in this tournament might eventually impress me, but not yet.
I think it makes it seem like they care a lot about what they're doing.
They do.
They do.
Does this happens every what? Was it World Cup every 4 years?
Yeah, 4 years. Happens staggered with the men's.
Once every 4 years. Listen, when you put a team that is making their first appearance ever in World Cup against the number one team in the world, what is supposed to happen in those games?
By the way, Chile, I don't know why I can't say
Chile.
It. Chile, they were...
You said it like 8 different times.
I have Chris in my head how he said. Say it for us, Chris.
Chile. We both said it at the same exact time. We got
it. No, but I think that they were ranked lower than Thailand.
They might have been.
So
no, I don't think that. That can't be right.
I thought I read that, but
I read a lot of things.
You read a lot of things wrong, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't believe anybody could be ranked below Thailand.
And you know, another thing is the fact that the Thailand players didn't take offense to it.
Yeah.
They were still praising the United States for some of the words they had for him after the game. So,
all right. Let's get to the next.
Number 3.
Up the road, the Anaheim Ducks are promoting a local favorite. Former Goals, now Ducks head coach Dallas Eakins was hired to lead the Ducks. Eakins coached the Goals throughout their 4 seasons in the American Hockey League, guiding them to a 154-95-23 record and 3 Calder Cup playoff berths. They reached the Western Division Finals in this past season. So, Chris, do you think homegrown coaches are the way to go rather than bringing in someone new?
Yes, I do. I think it's a very smart move in hockey. Dallas Eakins coached many of the kids that are playing for the Ducks now, so it makes perfect sense that they move up, he moves up. He did an excellent job here in San Diego. I will bring this name up for my era of Gulls fans, because not everybody gets an opportunity at the next level. Dallas Eakins is one of the lucky ones, but Steve Martinson won 5 championships here in San Diego, still coaching in minor league hockey somewhere, still winning championships in minor league hockey in other cities, has never gotten an opportunity at the NHL level. That's always bothered me a little bit, but every case is different. For Dallas Eakins, it worked out very nicely.
Tony, what do you think? Do you think homegrown coaching is the way to go rather than bringing in someone new?
I think we're seeing this trend across all sports, right? You get a staff that may have had these guys at a younger point or earlier in their careers. It just doesn't work out all the time that you can bring a coach up, that a head coach is qualified at the lower levels to be a head coach at the top levels. In this case, it seems to be working. And I actually, it's funny you brought this up. As you guys know, I'm like not the biggest hockey guy, even though I had those reports for you guys in the Stanley Cup.
Could have never told it, but hey, you broke down the Stanley Cup Finals, man. You were awesome.
I just happened to have a conversation with Mike Palm, and Fox Sports San Diego, and he was telling me, because he covers those games, and he was telling me that Anaheim's going to take some lumps early, but eventually they might have a chance to be a decent team with this group that has been down and is all going up now together. So I will be paying attention now that I know a little bit about
Mr. Eakins.
Teams. Yes.
I'm trying to get him on the show.
I mean, think of who's the Padre bench coach right now.
Rod Barajas. Yeah.
I mean, they promoted from
That's
within.
That's true.
Took their AAA manager, brought him here to San Diego.
Good point.
It's a smart way to go.
And let's get to number 2.
Number 2.
Did you guys see the biggest thing that happened on Twitter over the weekend? Did you guys see what it was?
Oh, my God. Are you talking about OJ?
Yes, I'm talking about OJ. I just yelled and everybody stared at me. OJ Simpson joined Twitter.
Now you're whispering.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't
no.
that crazy? It is a little crazy, but yeah, OJ was all over Twitter all weekend. He already has like 600 and something thousand followers and just being on Twitter in less than a week. But it really did bring up the age-old question. You know, OJ was... he was not convicted of murder back in 1994 and all that stuff. And he's had some troubles in his lifetime with going to prison and all that. But is it okay to follow OJ on Twitter, Tony?
This is ridiculous.
This is a real question that has been posted all over the world.
No, if you follow OJ on Twitter, you immediately should be locked up yourself. What kind of question is that?
It's a great question. The moral dilemma. Do you follow a moral suspected murderer?
You almost have to give up morals to even be on Twitter.
It's very good point.
So, I mean, that thing morals is out the door already from the moment you got a Twitter account. And that includes me, unfortunately. So, I choose not to be on there as much. I can't see myself following OJ. But I don't think you deserve to be banned for life because you decide to follow him. I mean, people, the reason why you get on there is so that you can get your thoughts off. And people want to know clearly by the amount of followers he got in like the first 5 hours. Clearly people want to know what's on his mind.
People are waiting for him to tweet out some hint as to whether or not he really did it or not. So there's that thought process in people's minds.
He's going to do it on Twitter.
If I follow O.J. Simpson on Twitter, I will get some sort of insight that I didn't know before. So it's very understanding that as a society we follow somebody like this, but no. It's not a bad thing to do. It's like you know, you telling me I'm going to show you a YouTube video of a car wreck, and I look over your shoulder and I watch the car wreck. I mean, because I want to see it.
All right. OJ's Twitter name is @TheRealOJ32, so I'm giving him promotion. But his bio on it says, "If you didn't see it here, I didn't say it." That's what his bio is.
That's the irony in that. Particular
well,
statement.
His first, I tried to get permission to use his tweet, but we couldn't. His first tweet was pretty much all this mumbo jumbo, and then at the end he said he's gonna prove something. Everybody wanted to know, are you gonna prove who the real killer was?
Oh my gosh, he's playing you guys right now.
He's already having to defend himself. He said in his third tweet ever, he said, "The first thing I want to set straight is this story. Pardo, who was not my manager, is talking about all over media regarding me and Kris Jenner, not me and whatever happened with the murder back in the day." So he's already defending
because
himself.
Because people keep been trying to say Khloe Kardashian is his daughter forever.
That is true. And he came out on Father's Day and said she's not my daughter.
This is going to be all-time mess.
This is going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be a complete utter mess, but you know what? That's the society in which we live.
Absolutely. Indeed. Love it. All right, let's move to the last.
Number one.
After playing in 838 games in the minor leagues, first baseman outfielder Ronel Ravelo finally got his ticket to the show. The Cardinals announced Monday that they had purchased the contract of him and placed infielder Munoz on the paternity list to make room for him. After playing in 838 games in the minor leagues, first baseman outfielder Ronel Ravelo finally got his ticket to the show. The Cardinals announced today they had purchased his contract after one of their players had to go on the paternity list. And he has played, as I said, in 838 minor league games without a sniff of the pros. He's 27 years old. He signed with the Cardinals as a minor leaguer as a free agent April 2017 after spending time in the farm systems of the A's and the White Sox, who drafted him in the sixth round in 2010. So, Chris, do you think longtime minor leaguers have a better or worse chance of success in the majors after so many years in the minors?
I don't think they have either a better or worse chance of success, but I will tell you this. I will root for the guy to have success more than I would most guys. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. Imagine anybody in any profession getting passed over so many times and finally getting an opportunity. Obviously, I'm going to root for this guy to have some success, so I hope it goes well and he gets to stay in the big leagues for a long time.
Tony, what do you think?
I agree with Chris. I actually have a lot of respect for guys that are willing to stick it out. I mean, put it this way, I got my first taste at the age of 23. 4 years more being in the minor leagues, I don't know if I would have made it, man. I mean, that is a serious grind. For, you know, you're not making a lot of money doing it either. So, a lot of respect for guys like that. I don't think he has a better or worse chance of succeeding at the big league level. It's all going to be dependent on what he does when he gets here. But certainly, grinding it out through two organizations, not ever getting a sniff of the big leagues. 800, how many games?
38, I believe.
That's a lot of minor league.
That's a lot,
baseball.
But that's nothing compared to the kids I used to work with the Gulls hockey team who never made the NHL, just played minor leagues their whole lives. I mean, there's a lot more people out there that play minor league sports their whole lives than there are that get to the major leagues in their sport. And this is a reminder of that and a tip of the cap to all those guys who play – more, quote, for the love of the game and never really get to see that big paycheck.
Yeah, Chris brings up a good point. A lot of guys are in this situation and never get that chance. Fact is, when you play 800 minor league games, the chances of you having that shot dwindle substantially. And that's because you get kind of keyholed into being
This is what you are.
Exactly. You're what they call an organizational guy. You know, you're there to fill spots. And hats off to the young man for finally getting it to the big show and earning his way up there.
Nice job, guys. All right, that's it for today's Big Five.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Gwynn and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, I'm really excited. I almost want to just step out of the way and let you just do your list, but I want to see how mine compares.
You got to go first.
I want to see how mine compares. So we'll start at number five.
Okay.
Craziest games in Padre history. So that means a whole lot of different things. My number five game.
Number five.
Thank you, Thomas. He always does that. I always say number five before he plays number five. My number five game took place on August 15th, 1980.
Wow, we're going to even have the dates. Okay.
I got the date of my game. I sat out in the left field pavilion for this game at old San Diego Qualcomm Stadium, Jack Murphy Stadium, I think, at the time. 7 o'clock, Friday night game, Padres against the eventual division champion Houston Astros. The game ended at 1:20 in the morning. It was 6 hours and 17 minutes long. It is still the longest by time game in Padre history. I watched it from first pitch to the last pitch. Thankfully, Jerry Mumphrey, playing center field for the Padres, and I think almost intentionally dropped a fly ball in the 20th inning with a couple of runners on base so that Houston could kindly score and end this game. And Dave Smith, the old Aztec and Houston reliever, picked up the win with 5 innings of scoreless relief. 3-1 Astros. Willie Montanez was 5-for-9. Joe Morgan, the Hall of Famer, was 0-for-9 for the Houston Astros. But the thing I remember about this game, Bill, was that I used to live close to the stadium, and my roommate came home from work that night. I said, let's go to the game. And he said, I'm a little tired. I'm going to take a nap for an hour. Why don't you go sit in the bleachers and left, and I'll just come meet you about the third or fourth inning. I said, all right. I went down. I sat in the bleachers. He never shows up. And now the game's going into the 12th inning, the 13th inning, and now you got to stay, right? You got to see it to its conclusion. 20th inning, it's over. I walk back to where we were sharing our apartment. My roommate was still asleep. He wakes up. He goes, what happened? Said, what do you mean what happened? It's 1:30 in the morning. I've been in a game for 6.5 hours. That's my fifth craziest game in Padre history.
You ever heard of too much information?
Was that too much information?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the segment just ended.
Segment's over.
Right.
All right, give me your
actually,
number five.
You know, my number five is along the same line of yours, but it's a different game. It's the game that ruined Tony or ended Tony Clark's career. The 23-inning game here between the Rockies and the Padres.
What was that, several years ago?
That was in 2005, I think.
Right.
And I'm not sure about the year. I did some rough notes. But what struck me about that game is it was a getaway day, and the Rockies left here to go to Houston and landed in Houston in morning rush hour traffic. And they played that night, and it was crazy. I mean, the Padres lost. It was, by innings, the longest game ever in Padres history. But what I remember is that Tony Clark started that game as giving, you know, just getting a rare start. And because they used Adrian as a pinch hitter and then he didn't go into the game, Tony played all 23 innings and was never the same after that game.
Wow.
I mean, he really wasn't. He had only seen spotty an inning here, an inning there, and then 23 innings, and it was like, oh, that's it.
That's it. Okay, so mine is the longest game time-wise, and yours is the longest game inning-wise.
It's strange that that would be my number five.
All right.
Number four.
Four. Thank you, Thomas. My number four is the game this past Friday night.
So's mine, actually.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, it's got to be on the list.
It's right there.
There it is. Because the stat I just gave Scraby, no team trailing on the road by six runs going into the ninth inning had won a game in 14 years in baseball. 4,000 games. And the Padres pulled it off. So I think that's got to be one of the craziest games in Padre history to get a six-run ninth.
Everything about that weekend just shows you what an abomination baseball
Why does it have to be an abomination? Why can't it just be fun, crazy baseball for a weekend?
Because that's not baseball.
What is? Okay. What are they supposed to do?
I've seen better pitching hitting matchups than wiffle ball.
Look, we play in our Wednesday night beer softball league, and we can't score that many runs.
Right. I mean, it's.
Do you just think that the pitchers just couldn't throw good pitches because of the altitude, or what? I mean, it's just a combination of everything.
To me, exactly. The field is so big because they've moved the fences back so far when they designed the place, and actually they did a good job on that because it's not the home runs that make it an abomination. It's all the balls that fall in. The outfielders have to play 8 miles deep, so you get pop fly after pop fly fall in, and then because they're so deep, the gaps are huge. And to me, that is also my number four. But when you talk about wacky,
that was wacky.
That was absolutely crazy. And it fits into an entire weekend of crazy.
Yeah, that'll be remembered forever, though. So that's why I say Coors Field is cool, because stuff like that happens. Well, we differ on that. What are you gonna say?
Number three.
But we both put a number four. All right, number three on my wackiest or craziest Padre games of all time. I don't know that this qualifies as crazy, but it certainly qualifies as memorable. October 6, 1984, game four, the NLCS, Padres over the Cubs, 7-5. Obviously, it's the game that Garvey hit the walk-off two-run homer. But I always felt it was crazy and memorable, not just because of that, but because Garvey did that four times in the game. He had an RBI double in the third inning to put them ahead. He had an RBI single in the fifth inning to tie the game. Another RBI single in the seventh inning to put them ahead again. And then after the Cubs tied it up, then he hit the two-run homer to win the game.
Right, right.
So I just thought, incredible performance by Garvey. Not just the home run, which everybody remembers, but the fact that he did it four times, and it obviously was an elimination game the Padres had to win, and the other stuff that goes with it.
Of course, a lot of people now in lore believe that that game decided the World Series. It wasn't. It was the next night, and the next day, actually, that they needed to win.
Right. And who singled before Garvey's walk-off homer?
Gwynn.
Of course.
Who else would it be? And who got the key hit the next day?
Tony Gwynn.
Right.
Of course.
So number four?
Number three.
I go to September 12th, 1998, when the Padres were down 7-0 to the Dodgers at Qualcomm Stadium, 60,823 there. And they rallied to win the game 8-7. And not only that, that game clinched the National League West division title.
They won the division on that game?
They won the division on that game.
Wow.
And
I didn't even remember that.
The winning rally went single, walk, 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 hit batter, walk.
Who was pitching for the Dodgers? Davis?
There were three guys. There were three guys in there. But they actually tied the game without getting the ball out of the infield.
Unbelievable.
To me, that game, the way it ended, or and that was not the ending. It was not like a walk-off win, but the crowd was frenetic.
Yes.
It was just crazy because that did, I mean, everybody had come out to see the Padres clinch their,
to clinch against the Dodgers.
Right. To clinch their third division title, and they fall behind 7-0 immediately and then climb back and win 8-7.
All right. That's a great game. I didn't remember that one.
That doesn't surprise
me. Number two.
All right. Number two for me. Number two and one are really close. I'll go number two, the 163rd game played on October 1st, 2007. In Denver, Coors Field. Obviously, everybody remembers Matt Holliday didn't touch home plate, but there were so many amazing things that happened in and around that game. I think it's one of the great games in baseball history. Major League Baseball Network did a countdown of the top 20 games in history, did not put this game in the countdown. I was stunned by that.
Just for Holiday slide alone, it should be in there.
Right. I mean, that game had a grand slam from Adrian Gonzalez. He had home runs from Torrey Alba, Helton. It had comebacks by the Padres, Brian Giles double in the eighth inning. It had Scott Harrison's two-run homer in the top of the 13th. And then it had Trevor in the bottom of the 13th and eventually Holiday. And it was an elimination, winner-take-all game.
Right.
I mean, the nerves that went along with that game, I'll never forget it. And obviously it didn't turn out the way the Padres wanted it to. Can I throw a quick addendum to that story? Bud Black, when he interviewed for the Rockies job, sat with the general manager and the owner, and behind the general and the manager and the owner was a picture of Matt Holliday not touching home plate. And Bud Black had to do the whole interview looking at that picture, and of course he had been the manager of the Padres the night that happened.
You should have never applied for that job.
Should have never applied for that job because of that.
My number two is game one of the 98 World Series.
Game one of the 98 World Series. Oh,
right.
That was a wacky game.
Right.
Oh,
I mean, Mark Langston. I mean, you got Tony Gwynn hit the famous home run off the facade at Yankee Stadium.
Greg Vaughn hit two homers.
Vaughn, right. I was just, okay, what? I don't jump in on yours.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
But anyway, and then of course, you have Tino Martinez is up, and Mark Langston throws. I mean, the pitch was so much a strike that it was a horrible pitch. It was like when he threw it, you thought, oh, this one's out of here.
Yep.
And Martinez he admitted afterwards, he was a little bit taken off kilter a little bit, took it, and they called it a ball. And on the next pitch, decisive, grand salami, home run, beats the Padres. And I've always wondered, I don't think the Padres could have won the World Series, but it would have been interesting if they had won that game, how far the series might have gone. The Yankees were a lot of people think the 98 Yankees were the greatest team ever, so.
You know, game three of that series at Qualcomm Stadium, I remember the Padres had a lead in that game. And
right.
Scott Brosius hit a three-run homer to turn that game around. So the Padres gave them a much better series than people remember.
Right,
because it went down as a sweep.
Sweep.
But the first game, like you said, turned on that one.
I got to hear your number one because you...
I have a feeling it's going to be the same.
Number one.
Number one craziest game in Padre history, August 12th, 1984.
No.
Not the same?
No.
All right. Well, mine is Padres Braves, the brawl in Atlanta.
That's a good one.
First pitch of the game, Pascual Perez hit Allen Wiggins. The rest of the game, the Padres tried to hit Pascual Perez. They couldn't hit him until the eighth inning.
Well, it's pretty hard to hit a guy who's running.
He was running out of the batter's
right.
box. Scraby, seriously. They were throwing pitches at him, and he was running out of the batter's box. And then he'd come back in and run out again. They finally hit him in the eighth inning. That cleared the benches, but it didn't turn into the brawl. In the ninth inning, people forget this, Donnie Moore hit Greg Nettles. That's what set off the actual brawl. 13 ejections. 5 fans were arrested. Ed Whitson ended up with no shirt on, and Atlanta won the game 5-3. That was the craziest day in Padre history.
That would have been in my top five.
Okay.
But there were three brawls in that game.
Three?
Yes.
See, I didn't remember. There was all one of them.
Second inning. They also the benches emptied, but that was more of a benches empty face-off type thing.
Right.
My craziest game in Padre history was Ray Kroc's first as an owner.
That has to be. You have to tell the story because people aren't going to remember.
Well, it was set up. Everybody thinks that he walked in and grabbed the microphone, but it was set up. John DeMott was the public address person at that time, and it had been planned that Ray wanted to address the crowd. And
is it, if you don't, I'm not trying to interrupt, but I'm just trying to get the time right. This is after he had come in and basically saved the franchise from moving to Washington, D.C.
This was the very first game, official game, him as an owner. And the Padres were just horrible. I mean, they played a miserable game. I don't have to detail every miscue they made. So in the ninth inning, when it comes time for Kroc to talk, he takes the microphone, and the first words out of his mouth were, you know, fans, I'm with you. This is the worst baseball I've ever seen. And as he's talking, he is looking towards the right field corner, and he is looking towards John DeMott. And as a streaker runs onto the field, he thinks the fans are cheering what he's saying, and they're actually cheering the streaker.
I did not know.
So as the streaker's running off the across the field and everybody's chasing him, Kroc doesn't realize it right away. And when he sees the streaker, he just goes off. You know, arrest that, get that guy off the field, arrest him. And it just sort of went downhill from there. Neither one of us, by the way, because mentioned the Roseanne Barr game.
The Roseanne bargain, because that was just before the game.
That was between. That was.
Sang, seventh inning stretch.
No. She sang it in the middle. National anthem between games of a doubleheader.
Oh, okay.
Working Women's Day, and also a military promotion. I've never heard so many.
What if we had put Chubb Feeney's game in?
Yeah,
that would have been hard to explain, though.
Right. This is. I mean, you guys are licensed, right, by the FCC?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't want to go there.
All right.
But, Roseanne's game could have been in there, too. But those, you were saying wacky, and I always thought
those are pretty wacky.
Right.
All right.
So,
I feel good about my list, but, I mean, I think yours is the ultimate list.
No, mine's not the ultimate list.
Yours is pretty good.
Yours too much, a little personal.
The countdown is now closed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.